Hey Google, what time is it?
It's 10:40 a.m.
Hey Google, what's today's date?
It's Sunday, April 21st, 2024.
Okay. So, I'm live. I've been trying to get myself used to doing live podcasts in real time. I'm hosted on Podbean, so I'm live right now. Okay, so I did a live podcast yesterday, and something happened to me yesterday after I left my home. It could just be a coincidence, but because of the type of podcast that I actually did yesterday, it's a 50-50. So, I left my home and I did like daily errands that I typically do. And when I got on 28 South, leaving from New Kensington to the Pittsburgh Mills, there was this, I don't know how it got there. I really don't. But I didn't see it. No one saw it until we got right up on it. There was this oversized cardboard box thrown in the middle of high-speed traffic on 28. Luckily, there was like four or five cars that encountered it. And we all were able to avoid it. It was weird because when I was getting on 28, there was this green, I don't know what you call it, crossover van, SUV. It was like an older model green truck. Something about the green car, I was like contemplating on putting my phone in my smart stand up and recording when I was on the highway. Because like I have smart glasses. I have a couple of pairs of smart glasses that record. I can also record on my dashboard if I want to. I'm not always recording. It just depends. But I had thought about it. Like, I actually was like, should I pull it out? Because he was driving. I don't want to say how he was driving because I don't really know if there's anything to really say about it. But let's just say I remember it was something about the green car that was in front of me that made me want to pull out and record, but I opted not to. So I won't go into any more detail, but as soon as we, you know, like as I was traveling on 28, I just seen this humongous oversized cardboard box just blow in the middle of the highway. And then everyone was like trying to avoid hitting it. And I literally missed running into it by like a split second because I had to wait for the car that was on my left, that was in my blind spot, to pass by. And then I was just praying that the car behind me, who couldn't see the humongous cardboard box in the middle of the highway, didn't ram into me because I couldn't go forward and I couldn't go to the left or to the right. There was a car on my right and there was a car on my left. But thankfully, honestly, I do feel like there's something up with that, but I definitely feel like the car on my left that was in my blind spot went by me fast enough for me to switch lanes so that I wouldn't have to like slam on my brakes and like maybe spiral out of control, because that's what would have happened. Like, there was nowhere for me to go, but he passed by me fast enough where I could just get over in the nick of time. And then the blue car, this blue sports car that was behind me, he really wasn't going that fast. He wasn't traveling that fast. So I was hoping that he didn't run into it because I switched lanes right before the box. Like, I don't think he saw the box, but he wasn't that close to me. Had he been really close to me, he probably would have ran into the box and spiraled out of control, but he wasn't that close to me. And I got over in enough time for him to see it. So he got over too. And it was, I don't know where the box came from. It was an oversized cardboard box in the middle of high speed traffic on 28. So I don't know if it blew from over on the other side. I do know I looked around to see like if there were any cameras that might have been able to capture how it even got there in the first place. And there is, there's like a high tower, it looks like of a 360 degree camera surveillance on 28 that I've never noticed before. So like after it happened, I was just like, it just made me look up around in my environment. I looked up and I'm like, okay, there is a high tower not too far from where this happened, because I was like, someone's gonna have to get that box off the highway, because it also was blowing. So it was like it was a huge oversized cardboard box that actually could be picked up by the wind, which was weird. But it just happened to be in the middle of the highway. Yeah, and so then when I got off to go to Chipotle, like I got off at 28 at Pittsburgh Mills to go to Chipotle, the green car was there again, and he, like when I was about to turn where the Starbucks is, make that left to go in Chipotle, like he couldn't even figure out then what lane he wanted to be in. Like he just seemed, you know, like maybe he was talk. Like the bottom line is, I don't know. All I know is that green car made me earlier wanted, I literally thought I should take out my camera and start recording while I was on the highway. Had I recorded, I would have been able to capture the whole thing on camera. So it's something about the green car, the white car that was in my blind spot. And I think the white car that was in my blind spot, I don't really feel much about. I'm very grateful that they passed by me fast enough to allow me to get over, because I couldn't get over because they were in my blind spot. So I was so grateful that they passed by fast enough for me to get over. And I was very grateful that the blue sports car wasn't riding my ass, because it was either I was going to get over or I was going to have to slam on my brakes, which would have caused me to spiral out of control and he could have hit me in the back, but he wasn't that close to me. So there were like two things that I was grateful of. I couldn't go anywhere on my right because there was a car on my right, and maybe that car was white. Like I'm testing my memory. So I'm grateful to the car on my left because they gave me a way to get over. I'm grateful to the car that was behind me because they weren't riding my ass and they didn't slam me in my back. And I was actually worried they were going to run into the box. Yeah. So, and I just feel like it was a little weird because of the recording that I did and the podcast that I did yesterday. And I wasn't even going to post it. Like the whole thing is, I mean, do the podcast. I did do like a written documentation of what happened. And for some reason in my mind, and this is so crazy about memory, I really thought that I had left the Dunkin' Donuts. Because that's what I normally do. Like I normally go to Dunkin' Donuts and then I'll go to get something to eat or whatever. But I didn't. I doubled back. I went to the Walgreens. I went to Myrna's. And then I was going to get Chinese food and I decided to get Chipotle. And then I went to go get Chipotle. But I have all my receipts for the metadata. So I feel like I got to my Chipotle receipt says that I got there at 4:30. I paid for my food at 4:31 p.m. The Myrna's receipt, where I got a slushie. I got two slushies from Myrna's. I hope I'm saying it right. That receipt is timestamped 4:09 p.m. So, and I got my coffee like a little bit before that, like around, I guess 3:31. And then out in between, so between 4:09 p.m. and 4:31 p.m. is when the whole oversized cardboard box thing happened on 28 South. going from New Kensington to the Pittsburgh Mills, which should have been caught on camera on the high tower cameras that for metadata that are on 28. I mean, they're tall enough where they should have been able to see. I feel like I'm hoping that it wasn't like in its blind spot, like those cameras where they were, how high they were on the mountain. I'm hoping that it could like capture the like whole mountain, because I'm like, where did the box come from? I mean, it was humongous and it was like blowing across the highway while people were traveling, you know, at normal highway speed. So, yeah, but anywho, I had to make a correction to my post, and I had took a picture of my Myrna's receipt, you know, because for the metadata, and then I posted it with my documentation of like the events that happened. And then all of a sudden I started to get burned at the top of my head. Now, mind you, I only spent $4.22 at Myrna's. My coffee was $3.91. So, but the whole thing is, why am I explaining myself? I'm 46, by the way. I've been married, divorced. All of my kids are grown. My youngest is 18. My other kid is 19. And my oldest is 21. I have a bachelor's, a master's degree, why am I explaining myself? I think the issue is, why did I get burned, right? Why did I get burned when I took a picture of the receipt on my iPhone? Like, that's the question. And I did a recording not too long ago, when I was driving past Gatto's. The same thing happened, like these white men, like, and it doesn't necessarily, I hate doing the color thing, because like I said, I get kindness from all different colors and I get shade from all different colors. So let me just say that they just happen to be white men. Okay. Because tomorrow something can happen and it might be a black person. So I don't like doing the color thing, because like I said to Jasmine in my poem, or I said to her before I read my poem, that I get shade and kindness from all different people of all different races. And I don't necessarily look at someone's color and determine, you know, what they think or what they believe or whatever. But when I was passing by Gatto's, and I had did a recording about it, I was coming over the bridge. And let me see if I can retell the story the same way. Like, I'm always testing my memory. But this was recently. I was coming over the bridge. And it's not in, like, it didn't happen immediately. Like, meaning I'm retelling the story from a while back. The one thing I remember is, one of the trucks turned out in front of me and I tried to avoid hitting him, like, because it wasn't his light, it was my light, it was a green light. He was at the light at Gatto's coming in onto the because I was coming off the Tarentum Bridge where the gas station was, and he was at the light at Gatto's. He turned onto, you know, that road, Tarentum Bridge Road, where I was going, because I was headed to the Dunkin' Donuts. He turned onto it. You know, he didn't have the light. I had the light. And I tried to, like, avoid hitting him because he wasn't going to stop. And when I tried to get over, then the car in front of me, they also tried to get over. But the thing is, they tried to swing where in front of me, where I had to not jump one lane but two lanes. So I should have just been able to get over to my left so that he would not hit me from the side on my right, because he was coming out into oncoming traffic. I should have just been able to get in my immediate left lane, but because the car that was in front of me also went over, And he wasn't really trying to avoid the truck because he was before the truck. He had passed the truck and then the truck came out on me. So I was like, okay, let me get over to my left so he don't hit me on my side. And then the car in front of me jumps over into the left, like trying to like make it where I hit his car. And then I instead jumped over into that middle lane where the police usually sit at when the kids get out of school and then out of school. So there's like a little lane there where cops sit, where Gatto's is. I was able to jump over to the second lane, and I felt like it was shady. And then I felt like it was timed and calculated, because when I was coming over to Renton Bridge, one of the cars did something really shady that I felt like they were like trying to time it. It just felt like that. I told the story already in one of my recordings, and I was just like, okay. Then one time I was coming out of my road, out of my block, and this green truck was flying up the street, like, you know, because where I live at is Taylor. You know, my last name is Naylor. My maiden name is Naylor, and I live on Taylor, and I have biotech in my body that does all these things to me. But anywho, that goes to my last, one of my tweets that I sent out a few days ago, because I read this article. I'm going off topic, but I read this article about Thomas Jefferson and the last eldest descendant of Thomas Jefferson lives in New Kensington. She is the great, great, great granddaughter of Sally Hemings. And at the end of the article that was just posted, the great, great, great granddaughter of Sally Hemings said that she felt like the block that she presently lives on now, or the block she presently lives on now, it had a significant meaning. I forget how she worded it. And it made me think about when I, after they put this biotech in my body here in New Kensington, after it was snuck in my body, there was this, there was this sign that they took down, because I had took pictures of it. And you just have to look at the tweet. You have to look at the tweet to really see what I'm saying. You have to look at the tweet. But when I was coming off my block, I'm going to just skip over that and not go into the details of that. But when I was coming out of my block, Taylor Avenue, when I was coming out of my block, this was not too long ago, this truck and it flew up Taylor, like didn't fly up Taylor. I was coming off of Taylor. So I'm driving up the street of Taylor and I'm making a right onto that block, whatever that block is. But this car was flying up the street. No big deal. Cars fly up that street all the time. So I really didn't really think anything of it. Like I didn't think it was anything malicious or anything going on, because no offense, cars fly up and down the opposing streets when we come off of Taylor. So, but the thing that made me think something wasn't right was the truck was always in front of me when I was traveling up Freeport, when I made the left onto Tarento where the Taco Bell and the 7-Eleven was. When I, you know, I was going to Dunkin' Donuts like I normally do. And when I got over the Tarrenton Bridge, the same truck was still there. And I was behind that truck. But when I had made the right off of the Tarrenton Bridge, it just stopped in the middle of the street. Like there were no lights. So you make a right before the gas station. And that's where the Harley Davidson I guess store is, because they have like Gatto's has like a Harley Davidson like store or something. So when I made the right off of the Tarentum Bridge, the green truck made the right first, and then I made the right, and then it just stopped in the middle of the street. No stop signs, no lights, nothing. Just, it just stopped. There's no lights there. There's no nothing. Like, when you make the right, it's, you just travel down that road. You can park your car. Like, at first I thought, okay, maybe they're parking. Like, that's my, that was my assumption. But then it started to go again and then stopped again. And there was no, there was nowhere for it to park. It was weird. And so I just sat there. I didn't even beat my horn. And the person just went. And it was a white female in the car. It was weird. It was weird because she never parked or anything. Eventually, when we got further down where the rental place is, like, there's like a place where you can rent equipment. Eventually she did like park somewhere, but it wasn't, it was the way it happened. Like, we both turned the corner together and then she just stops. And then I look around to see, maybe she's trying to park, but I realized there were no parking spaces and she had a humongous truck and there were no lights and there was no stop signs and she didn't have no turn signal on. So I was just a little taken back. Then she wanted to start to travel again and then stopped again. And I was just like, okay, this is weird. So, I don't know. How I feel is, I do have the biotech in my body, and I'm not lying about it. And I just believe that there are certain people that want to be able to take away my freedom and rights. I just do. I just feel like what has happened to me is illegal and it's unconstitutional. And the truth is inside me. The Constitution is inside my body, my gut. Why? Because my very existence turns our country into hypocrites, basically. It's not legal what's happened to me, and they're lying about it. So I kind of feel like I'm not really that surprised that, like, these things happen to me all the time. But I'm like, I'm not going to be less free because you broke the law and did something to me now that you want to cover up and get away with. You don't want to pay me to take out something that you snuck in my body, because I shouldn't be living here. Like, honestly, I feel like living in this house every day is risking my life. I do. I feel like my house needs so much rehab and repair. I feel like living here is risking my life. I do. I feel that way because of the lack of money and resources I have, the way that this biotech is being used on me daily. I don't think that whoever, like, burns my head or whatever cares about what I'm drinking. I think they care about the biotech in my body, and they are wanting to preserve my cells. I really do. I feel like they could care less what I do or what I drink or what I eat. What they care about is what I consume, because they're trying to preserve my body, because I'm radioactive from the tips of my toenails to the fibers of my hair. Because often, like now, like often when I would like, drink my wine or drink something in front of my iPhone or my Android, I would get burned for it. Now I do it on purpose. I literally put the whole bottle like right in the view of all of my devices and my phone, and there, whoever is hacking my devices to burn me. Like, I literally just feel like, I used to like hide my, like when I would throw my, I still do it sometimes, and I'd be checking my own self. Like, I had to throw out my bottle yesterday, and I put it under my arm to go take it to the trash. And I got mad at myself for that. And I was like, you know, this is how you train a dog. This is how you create fear. You're 46 years old. I've never even been to a bar in New Kensington. I haven't been to a club in a decade. Literally, my life has stopped since they put this biotech in my body. Like I said, if I had to confess my sins, I don't really have any. I live my life like a nun. And I haven't had sex with a man since 2010. It's 2024. I haven't had sex, period. I've been getting digi-fucked for 9 years by biotech that was snuck in my body. I've not done anything. I haven't been on vacation. The last time I was on a real vacation is I went to Disney World. in like 20, I think it was like 2013. Other than that, my vacations have been visiting my family, and I've been to the beach occasionally, but I used to live near the beach. Like, I lived in Williamstown, New Jersey, which is off of the Black Horse Pike and off of 42. And Atlantic City is literally 40 minutes from my house. Wildwood is 30 minutes from my house. So that's not really a vacation to me. My dad, I grew up, part of my life was with my mother, and the other part was with my dad in Williamstown. We used to go to Wildwood all the time. We used to go to Ocean City, New Jersey all the time. We used to, you know, like, that's, Atlantic City is like up the street from us. That's not like a vacation. So, I'm just saying, that's where I'm from. My mom and I, because she lived in Yadin, we used to go to Rehoboth Beach all the time. Like, Delaware is like Detroit. It's not a vacation. Like, Delaware beaches, New Jersey beaches, South Jersey beaches, are, it's not a vacation to me. Like, it's something that I did as a kid, as a teenager, as an adult growing up, because the tri-state area in Philadelphia, we're surrounded by beaches. That's not like a real vacation. It's like something you do on a weekend, you know? So I have done that, you know, but I've done that all of my life. And I've done it less actually since they snuck this biotech in my body and I've been living up here. I have gone one time. I took my kids to Erie Beach by myself because I had never been there, and it was nice. I literally felt... When I went to Erie Beach, I was like, oh my God, if the people from where I'm from saw Erie Beach, this, like, when I went to Erie Beach, they had so many for sale signs everywhere. It was crazy. I didn't understand it because the beach was beautiful. It was clean. The water was nice. It wasn't like the ocean, you know, like, cause it's a lake. So it was subtle. But you could see your feet in the water. Like, when you walk into the water, you could see your legs and your feet. And it was it was really clean and serene. And I was just like, but all the real estate around it was for sale. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, if the people where I'm from came up here, they would buy everything up like candy. Because it's near the water. It's near the water. And the beaches are huge. Like, the beaches are huge and clean. And then the inside, they had like the canoeing side. It was kind of weird because it's like, when I come to Western Pennsylvania, it's like a world less traveled by. It's like Middle Earth. Like, when you come from Philly and you come up the Turnpike, it reminds me of like Lord of the Rings, Middle Earth, because Pennsylvania is a huge state, but a lot of the state, I don't know if it's been donated to agriculture, but it's unpopulated. It really is unpopulated. Like when you, it's like on each end is a major ball, and the one ball is Philly and then the other ball is Pittsburgh, but all in between it is unpopulated. It's just open land. And then when you go to like Erie, they got that all, like, they had like 7 beaches on like a cul-de-sac. So the cul-de-sac, you go around a cul-de-sac and it's a beach. Like, they have a sectioned off beach. So it reminds me of a cul-de-sac. And each beach is humongous and clean, and it just is out to the water. And the water is beautiful. But I was just confused. I'm like, what is going on in Western Pennsylvania? I've always wondered. And then even like, a lot of the houses when I first moved here, I would travel to other areas like further out from New Kensington, and they had like a lot of those colonial vintage Queen Victoria homes, and they were selling them for nothing. Like, I had one that I had before I bought this house on Taylor Avenue. I bought it for like cents on a dollar. Like, it was like a 5-bedroom, 2-car garage, 3 full-bathroom house. You should see what I bought it for on Taylor Avenue. Nicola Naylor bought a house on Taylor Avenue. I was grateful for it. It just needs a lot of work. But I had looked in other places because I have a real estate license, and like I said, I was more brave when I moved here. I feel like I'm still brave, but let's just say I was like venturous. Like I was adventurous. Like I wanted to like discover. Like I was like taking my kids to all the museums in Pittsburgh, all the kid ones. And then I was, you know, using my license and connecting with other realtors to go see what else was out there, because I realized that the 2-bedroom house that I was living in was not conducive, was not good for my kids because they were aging up, and the amount of work that I needed to put into the house, they wouldn't give me a loan because they said that it was undervalued. They said that they wouldn't lend on a home that was undervalued, which, you know, like I had my own money that I was willing to put in. I already put in plumbing. I put in electricity. But there was some structural damage that needed to be repaired. And I didn't have enough money, but I had money, meaning I bought another house cash. So I had money, but I needed additional money to get the work done, adding to my money, and they wouldn't give me the money to do it. So I was like, well, if you only have, like, for instance, if you only have $10,000 and you know that this costs $20,000 to fix, but you can buy something that's much bigger, that has more value, holds more value, like a 2-bedroom versus a 5-bedroom, which are $10,000, what would you do? You know, if you know that you stuck in this house and it costs $20,000, you don't have it and they won't give it to you because it's undervalued, right? And you have the $10,000, you can use that $10,000 to go buy a 5-bedroom, 3 full-bath house that gives your kids their own rooms and is in better condition. What would you do, right? So obviously I made the choice. Because the banks kept telling me at the time, well, if you get a house that's worth more money, then we'll give you a loan because we have a minimum loan balance. And I found out that that wasn't true either, because I did that. At the time when I moved here, I had really good credit. I had, my car was paid off. I bought my house cash. I was in the driver's seat. You know, I even started looking for jobs as soon as I got here. Wasn't able to find any, except that surgery. I could tell you all the jobs that I applied for. And they kept telling me, well, and I was vested because I was living in the house, but they wouldn't give me a loan because they said that they had a minimum loan amount that they were willing to allow you to get a HELOC. That's what it's called, home equity loan or a mortgage, whatever you want to call it, first mortgage. And they said, well, if you move into a house that has an appraisal value of this, then we can, you know, we might be able to give you money for that. So I was like, okay, so I just need to buy a house that holds the value in order for you to allow, to give me the money that I need to fix it up in a way that is suitable for my kids. And they were like, yeah, because I had good credit. Right now I don't, my credit's shot to hell, but I had really good credit and I didn't have any car loans. I moved into this house and the CO, first of all, I bought this house in 2015, but the CO wouldn't allow me to move in it until I got certain repairs done. So I went to the lenders again with good credit between 2015 and 2018 to get the money that I needed to do the things that the CO required for me to move in the house. No go. So I had to wing it. Like I had to wing it like I always do. I'm always winging it. I had to get my uncle and my uncle's friend to come back up and kind of like, I'm not going to say they did a half-ass job, but I also had half-ass money. So it's no insult against them, but if you got half-ass money, you can only do a half-ass job. Cause I didn't have a loan or anything. I had to finagle, shenagle, and wiggle my way into meeting the CO requirements to move into the house. And they were never willing to give me a loan adequate enough to do all the repairs that was needed. But I could get a hard money loan at high interest with a high payment every month that wasn't really enough money to do anything. It was like they give you a little bit amount of money and charge you a whole lot, and they know that it's not enough for you to get anything done. Unlike a home equity loan, they give you a substantial amount of money at a lower interest rate that is reasonable for you to pay so that you can actually accomplish your goals. So I feel like there is some initiative to devalue or create hardships for certain classes of people where they don't own but only can rent. And then the whole thing is, well, because you don't take care of your property or because you don't do this, but you set it up, you set the system up where you don't allow them to get the resources or allow me to get the resources that I need to even do that. You know, like if you're giving out hard money loans that are for a little bit of money that can't really make, that aren't really, what's the word that I want to, that don't allow people to invest so that you have what's called appreciation. So appreciation is like, the way I can explain, I have to use a car to explain appreciation. So like, everyone knows, my dad used to tell me this stuff all the time, that when you buy a car, the minute you pull it off the lot, it depreciates. But when you buy a house, it appreciates automatically. Even if it's land or a shell, over time, it will automatically appreciate. But a car will not, right? So the thing about a house is that they would give these hard money loans at high interest that wouldn't allow you to, that wasn't a really enough to allow you to create what was called appreciation or add value to your assets. What it would do is it would create hardship or obligation where it's kind of like pretending like you're giving somebody a head start and then tripping them as soon as they start running. So that's how I felt. It felt like that to me. Even, but then it looks like you're helping, but you're really not. You're really trying to create obligation without the potential or the ability for appreciation, so that eventually they run out of fuel or energy and then they lose everything. That's kind of how it felt to me. And I went through that for like, and then the sabotage of like doing things to my assets and my resources so that I'm not successful. It just seemed, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Oh, boy. Sorry. Give me a second. Oh. Okay. All right, anywho. Yeah, so I'm just saying a whole lot of things. Hold on. Yeah, how did I even get, like, I really went into other details. Into other details. Yeah, so I know what I was talking about, but I'm trying to get it back to the beginning. Like, I was talking about, my situation here as far as like having this biotech in my body and the housing conditions, and then I was telling you about all the things that I did you know, proactively as like a single mom raising three kids by myself, a divorcee raising three kids by myself, to try to make our lives better, and how I felt like I was being sabotaged the whole way through, just by the defeat and destructuring of, and I was trying to like give real examples, like, and I talk about that in my manuscript too, believe it or not, because it was like someone might say, what does that have to do with the psychology of feeling? Because I had this biotech in my body, and I felt deliberately disadvantaged in a way where not only is it like trying to control what happens to your body, both sexually, physically, but then also trying to control your access to resources within your environment, as far as like what's available to you, trying to always keep you like as the guinea pig on the wheel, not ever really able to like move forward or really build, like the facade of pretending like you're giving someone an opportunity, but then trying to find ways secretly to like sabotage them, you know, so that they're not successful. And it's like the look of help, but not real help. Like it's so it's really structuring an environment of obligation and need so that you can better utilize that person for whatever you need them for. So I felt that way about some of the ways that the biotech was being used on me. I felt like, and I did talked about that in my previous recording, about like turning the human body into what I call a utility, you know, for the needs of others. And then I also felt like the way that the environment was structured in a way that puts you in a situation where you're more obligated and less free, so that the utility is the need that, I'm trying to say this the right way, so that the condition looks like a choice. I'm shortening it by just saying it, so that certain conditions look like a choice when really it was structured that way, so that you are constantly and forever behind and obligated to the point where it's like, this is your fault. You did this to yourself. Like, and I'm always like, I didn't put biotech in my body myself. I'm not remote controlling my pussy myself. I'm not burning my skin myself. I had good credit, and I should have been. Why were you able to give me a hard money loan at a time where I had good credit that was a little bit of money at high interest, high payment, and not give me a home equity loan where I could build and appreciate at a low interest rate, where I could actually get stuff repaired and stuff fixed? Because you're not really trying to set me up so that I would gain. You're trying to set me up so that I'm obligated and that I would lose over time. And that I would be in a needy situation where it would be easier to use me, because I'm always trying to, you know, like my mom used to use that saying, I don't even want to use that, but, you know, take from Peter to pay Paul, you know. So it's another word that they use, but I'm not going to use that, but take from Peter to pay Paul, you know. So I felt like you make it look like you're helping, but really you're hoping that you take on so much unreasonable debt that you can't pay it, and then you lose everything. And even with the hard money credit cards, I felt like they would give you these credit cards, right, with this little, like a little credit limit, but a high payment. So, and then in order for you to maintain your credit, you had to pay it. So if you're paying $50 or $40 a month on a credit limit of $200, and you have like three or four cards, that you've done nothing with that $200. It's been fees associated with that $200, annual fees, sometimes monthly fees, and now you have to pay $40 a month to pay it back, right? And you only get a certain amount of money every month, and you have two or three of those cards. and then you have all your other bills. I just felt like it was trickery, you know, like it was trickery. But it's the thing is, you would say that, oh, these people are stupid. Well, you're stupid for doing that. But a lot of times people make choices based on need and desperation, because they're in a system that creates desperation and need. And so that's the only option available to them. So that's, you know, it's easy to do that when someone is deliberately sabotaging your environment, making it where you can never get ahead. Because I was ahead at some point in my life, I know that what I'm saying is true. I'm like, you'll give me a hard money. You approved me for this hard money loan where I had to pay this high payment. I could have made that same payment over here at a lower interest for more money. They're the same. Why are you giving me this? I can't do nothing with this. I can't get my kitchen fixed up with this. I can't do nothing with this, but I'm paying the same amount. And I had good credit at the time. You see what I'm saying? I had good credit at the time. And their excuse was the value of your home isn't what it needs to be. And because I used to be a mortgage broker, I do know that often that is true, is that certain lenders will only lend, will have a minimum loan amount. Usually that's when you get in a mortgage. But a HELOC is usually, you know, they look at your tax records on your home. They make sure you're vested, like you own or occupy it. They check your credit, your debt to income ratio, and usually they will qualify you for a HELOC based on the value of your home. They'll give you, like, some banks will give you, you know, up to 90% loan to value on your home, 80%. But usually on homes where you're vested and you live in them, they don't always have what's called a minimum loan amount, because they, like, especially credit unions. So I just felt like that was bullshit. And, you know, and then they sent me to the place across the street for the hard money loan where they hardly gave me any money, where I couldn't really do anything. And then they charged me high interest, which would have been sometimes the same or more payment that I would have been paying on a HELOC, where I could have actually got things done. So this is, I should have told these stories on way before. It would have been more credible, because my credit would have been better, so you would have believed me. Like, I should have had my podcast years back, you know, talking about some of the stuff that I've been through that has caused this, like, avalanche of sabotage. It's like, I feel sabotaged from the inside out. I feel sabotaged from the inside out, literally, not metaphorically. Like, I have biotech in my body. Someone can remote control my pussy, burn my skin and all this kind of stuff. And I'm living in a dilapidated house that is a diamond in the rough if it was fixed up, but it's not fixed up. And my credit is not that good anymore. And then I'm trying to mind my business and go about my way, and I got evil motherfuckers trying to set me up on the highway and on the road. Now, some of it, the highway thing could have just been a coincidence. But the only reason why I say it might not be is because of the podcast that I did yesterday before I left my house. And I just did a recording not too long ago, like literally last week, that I don't think I posted, that about what happened to me when I came over to Renton Bridge over Gatos. Like, I tell my stories all the time. Some of them I post, some of them I don't post, you know, but I feel like it's a 50-50, you know, so I might as well just document it. And then the thing is, this has been happening over years. Like, I have, like, short videos of, like, shadiness on the road, and I'm just like, this is not a third world country. This is not a communistic country. I am not property. You don't own me. You can't control anything that I do if it doesn't have to do with U.S. law. Why is it? And that's why I said that the biotech, because it's in my body, some of the, not philosophy, I don't want to use that word because it's not philosophy, but I feel like the people that did this to me don't realize, or maybe they do. Sometimes I feel like I give them too much credit, that I'm the naive one. I feel like I'm the naive one. But I'm always giving them the benefit of the doubt and saying that they don't realize that they're emulating the same practices that were done during slavery as far as how they looked at blacks and treated them like chattel. You think because I have the biotech in my body that you're somehow entitled or emboldened to correct me or to regulate me, and you're not. Tricks are for kids. I'm not a kid. I'm a grown-ass woman. I've been married, divorced, and I could probably got more degrees than you have. You don't have the right to patrol or regulate me. The cops do. If I do something wrong, that's their job. The thing is, I'm not doing anything wrong. You want me to live up to your preferences. You don't get to prefer on my life with this biotech in my body. I am not chattel. I am not property. You're not entitled or emboldened to regulate or teach me a lesson about anything. I'm not your child. Like, so I just feel like because the biotech is in my body, that certain people, not all people, feel like they are entitled or emboldened to regulate or teach me a lesson, you know, like about certain things. And I'm like, there's no lessons to teach, you know, like I can do what I want to do. Even like at night, like when I have my wine out or something, I used to get burned in my head and stuff when I would like drink my wine. When I would take my wine out of my room to throw it in the trash, I would get burned. And at first I was like hiding it, but I was hiding it because I felt like at one point I didn't used to have locks on my door. There were times that I would like leave my wine in my room and I wouldn't finish it. And then the next day I would drink it and it would make me feel weird. And I was like, I didn't feel weird the night before and now, but now I'm drinking it now and I feel weird. So I felt like something wasn't right. So a lot of times I don't even like to leave unfinished drinks. And like when I don't finish it, I often throw it out and I feel like it's a waste. So it's caused me to like finish my drinks. And like I said, if I don't finish them, I most likely won't drink it and it'll just sit there until I throw it out because of things that have happened in the past. That's why I lock my door now. And I used to have a camera in my room, but I took it out of my room. But I used to have one in my room because I felt like somebody was doing something to my unfinished drinks that I would just leave for the night next night. I mean, I might be giving out too much information, but I also felt like it was like to teach me a lesson, to get me in my place, to put me in my place, to make me afraid to have wine. And the whole thing is, I don't even drink hard liquor. Like I don't. And the hard liquor that I was buying, I wasn't using it to drink it. So I wasn't drinking it. And that's really the truth. I wasn't drinking it. I drank sweet drinks like Moscato, sweet red, stuff like that. I only like sweet coffee. I'm a sweet drinker. Like, so and the whole thing is, I shouldn't even be explaining any of this. Like, I don't owe anyone an explanation, but I feel like the mentality of the people that have done this to me, they see themselves as like some type of overseer. Like they feel entitled or emboldened or something to kind of like get me in line and make sure I act right and make sure I do right and make sure this and that. And it really has nothing. If all it has something to do with them is preserving myself, preserving my body. That's the only thing that they fucking care about is my body with the biotech in it. And I ignore them. I do whatever the fuck I want, especially because I'm not a lawbreaker. I'm not like somebody that breaks the law. I feel like they keep me without money and resources because you keep your friends close and your enemies closer, and especially your science project. They keep me without money, so I can't go very far and do a whole lot. And then they try to act like I wasn't nice enough or I didn't do the right thing, so therefore I'm undeserving. As though the U.S. law has something to do with being nice or not being nice. You didn't follow the law when you snuck this biotech in my body. You're not nice. Like, if we want to talk about being nice, you remote controlling my pussy against my will. That's not being fucking nice. You burning my skin with biotech. That's not being nice. Why is it that I got to pass some type of nice contest for me to get the same inalienable rights that all U.S. citizens are entitled to? Why is this a nice factor? I mean, you know, when you everything you've done to me isn't fucking nice. Having me and my kids live without water for months isn't nice. Breaking my water pipes isn't fucking nice. How about that? You know, so why is this like a likability nice contest? Matter of fact, and if you were trying to punish me, you didn't just punish me, you punished my kids. What do my innocent kids have to do with it? How old were my kids when you snuck this biotech in my body? That wasn't fucking nice. You know, so I just feel like the bamboozling, the hoodwinking, the gaslighting that has been going on, I haven't really bought into it, but I think the people that did this to me think that I have, like, because I've never really been able to fight back against the bullshit that they try to pull on me. And how I know that it's wrong. How do I know that it's wrong? You're not entitled to do it, to control anything that I do in my life. Nothing. And I always feel like you always want to control and regulate anything that is oppressive, but then withhold anything that gives more freedom and opportunity. It just seems like that. Like that's your main goal is like even... Let me give some examples of what I'm trying to say. I'm going to give some examples. Okay, so I have this young lady living in my house that's not my kid, right? Because her mom lost her home, right? So I'm just giving that as some background, some context, but I'm about to give you an example of what I'm talking about. So, and this has nothing to do with the young lady that's living in my house, but I just wanted to say that there's a kid in my house right now. She's 17. She moved in when she was 16 and her mom lost her home. Her mom is still involved in her life. She talks to her mom all the time. She sees her mom. Her mom picks her up to take her to work and stuff. So she's around, but her mom is living in a house where there's no room. And then her mom also has health problems. So I'll just leave it like that. Her mom has health problems. Okay, so moving on from there. But there have been a couple of times where my children have gone through some things. And like, I'm going to give an example. When my daughter was in high school, I don't even know if I should say this. I don't even know if it's, I don't know if my daughter gets mad at me for saying this. Her teacher asked her, did she smoke weed, right? This is my other daughter. She wasn't caught smoking weed. They asked her, did she smoke weed? And she said, yes. So they sent DHS to my house to check on her. The lady that came to my house, she was nice. Like, the whole thing is, I don't have anything to hide. Everyone else does. She came to my house. I told her everything. I told her that I had biotech in my body. I told her that we don't have hot water. Because she was like, is there anything that we can do to help you? You know, like, that's the question, right? This is what I'm trying to talk about. How, and I have a point to this. And I'm about to tell you what my point is. Because I'm doing a podcast. I was testing the system. I was testing the system. That's what I was doing, testing the system. So I was like, I'm going to be fully honest and forthcoming with this lady and see what she does. I just wanted to see what she would do, you know. So she asked me about Kayla. She wanted to walk through the house, see the room, I let her, all of that. Let her come in, talk to her. And once I knew who she was, like at first when she came, I was not sure. First of all, I had got attacked by the biotech. Let me back up. I got attacked by the biotech. Before she came to my house, I did not even know she was coming to my house. Matter of fact, I knew someone was at my door because I was getting attacked by the biotech. And then she told me where she was from. And I told her I needed to check on things before I let her in my house. So I checked, like I followed up with whoever I needed to follow up with. I asked my daughter because I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't even know what had happened at the school yet. So I found out from my daughter and I found out from the school what was going on. So then a lady came back and I let her in my house. Like, cause it just, but I felt like they were setting me up for a bad occurrence, but I have cameras everywhere. I have cameras inside my house, outside my house. And I do that not just for someone maybe trying to hurt me, but I do that in case someone tries to say that I tried to hurt them. because I have biotech in my body. So it's made me very, like, I'm an open book, basically, because of all the stuff that happens to me. So she comes unannounced, and I was getting attacked before she came, when she came to my door. But I have like 100 cameras outside, 100 cameras in my house. And I told her she had to come back because I needed to make sure, find out what was going on. Found out what was going on. She came back. She comes in. We talk. I tell her, you know, the truth. Like, there's nothing for me to hide. Like, I'm always wanting help to see if they will actually help. I'm always wanting to see if they're going to help, right? So I was like, well, we don't have hot water, you know, because of our hot water heater, right? You know, since she was so concerned about the welfare of Kayla. And I'm not even saying her. I'm talking about the system. Since the system was so concerned about the welfare of the child, you know, I was just testing the whole being concerned about the welfare of the child. So I was like, we don't have hot water. Is there any programs or anything you could do to help us so that we can get hot water? And she was like, I'm going to look into it and see, you know, what we can do to see if maybe, she even told me about the weatherization program. And I said, I had tried to apply for that at certain times and nothing happened with that. But I told her, I don't know if it was on the first or second visit, because she came first to investigate, and the second time she came to close the case. So the next time she came to close it. She was like, I'm closing this out. But I told her, I said, you know, they use the system to try to like criminalize people and catch people. They don't really want to help people. That's what I told her. I said it was supposed to be a got you moment. And she said she understood what I was saying. I was like, because you're not really helping us make improvements to make our lives better. But had you come in and let's say I was doing something bad or wrong, my kids would have been taken from me and I would have been arrested, right? You really aren't here to help make our lifestyle better or more comfortable. You are very much aware that there are children here and I have cold water. And you are not willing to do anything. You know, like, I was upfront with her and she was upfront with me by telling me that, you know, she was kind of letting me know who she was as far as like, well, this is just my job. And they have us come to people's house. And I told her, I said, you know, this is dangerous for them to send you to somebody's house by yourself because I have biotech in my body. And I told her, I said, you know, I was attacked when you came to my door and I was attacked before you came to my house. And I like, you, they have you going to people's homes by yourself. She was like a young girl. I said, they got you coming to people's homes. You don't even know what you're walking into. And then I said, now you're here and you see our living situation and conditions and you're not here to help. You're here to catch somebody doing something bad so that you can criminalize them. So I felt like the system was not really set up to really help people. But it's set up to catch people doing things wrong so that they can criminalize them. And that's kind of how I felt. And I told her that. And she didn't really disagree with me. And she closed the case out. And we still had cold water after she left. So I should have been telling these stories a long time ago. But it took me a while to get here. I think because now my kids are grown. It's like, you know, because at that time, I feel like I also was a little not wanting my kids to be taken from me, not wanting my kids to be in the system. And so I feel like maybe I'm more bolder now. But I was bold then, though. Like, I said this to her face. And she kind of was, like, understanding what I was saying, because she was like, well, and I was like, they don't have anything that you can, you know, like, what happens when DHS walks in the house and they don't have water or they don't have hot water? What do? You know, like, do you, like, you're here to make sure everyone's okay, right? You know, And so, like, I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs in my life. I've never smoked weed or anything. But I just feel like that a lot of people point the finger and tell other people what they can and cannot do, but they're not really trying to help make their situation better. But they want to be able to enforce regulations and laws without any assistance to help improve the environment. And I feel the same way about pregnancy. Like I said in my last recording, and I also said in my manuscript that in Texas, this is another example. I said in my manuscript, I forget exactly how I worded it. I'm going to paraphrase what I said. And I said it just in my last podcast that Texas had this law, and I don't know if the law is still in place, where anybody could sue somebody for having an abortion. And I was like, why don't they have to put their money where their mouth is? If anybody that's unrelated to you in your situation and your lifestyle can sue you for choosing what happens to your body in regards to a pregnancy that you may not can afford, that you may be in an environment where it might not be safe to have a child, where you might have adverse health problems, where you just might not be psychologically or mentally ready to have a child. If they can sue you, anybody can sue you and tell you that you can't have an abortion, then they should be also required to pay child support to support that child that they sued for you to keep. You know, because it just seems right, right? You want to be able to regulate another woman's body, and you want to be able to regulate her pregnancy with a child that you have to raise, that you have to feed, that you have to take care of, that you have to have a safe environment for. If you want to be able to control that, then you have to pay for that. I feel like Texas should not take any suits from anybody that's not willing to fund and pay for forcing somebody else that's unrelated to them to take on obligations that they're not ready for. So you want to be able to regulate and stipulate and tell other people what they can and cannot do that is unrelated to you, and then you don't have to pay for that. So that's a different kind of example. That's not exactly the same example. But I just see the, like I said, hypocrisy is Mount Everest in the United States of America. It's Mount fucking Everest. And I feel like people often sometimes aren't really trying to help, but trying to judge and trying to hurt and get you in trouble. And like I said, I can tell when people are trying to help because that's what they do. They help. They don't give out opinions and put people down and criminalize. They try to make a situation better, especially with me. Like I'm not someone that my kids have never seen me with anyone with other than their dad. I don't do drugs. I'm not swinging from chandeliers at a club or a bar. But even if I was, you never know. Like I'm just saying I'm your best case scenario. And there were still people with their noses up in the air, looking down upon, passing judgment, trying to get a gotcha moment without any help or assistance. And it just shows the like human nature of people. That is it that you really care? Like, what is your real motivations behind what you're doing and how you're treating this person? Are you trying to, I heard someone say on the news, they don't want to fix the problem. They want to use the problem. Fixing the problem is not the goal here. They don't want to fix the problem. They want the problem to occur so that they can use the problem to push forward their own initiative. Fixing it has never been part of it's never been the concern. And I've been finding that out a lot. I have found that out a lot over the years. And it's sad in some way. And I do kind of worry about people that are in poverty. And I do feel like poverty is often criminalized on purpose. on purpose. But anywho, I'm gonna end the recording here.